earlier on must be the load shedding. We are, of course, here until together until 8 p.m. A few weeks ago, there was a very interesting announcement that came from National Treasury that advocated for the prioritization of local cement, which simply meant that companies like Sephaku and PPC were celebrating because it looked like government was finally executing on its commitment to localization. However, the question remains on whether that is indeed the way to go. And joining us on the line is Ern Bernstein from the Center for Development Enterprise. And you have put together some data. You've come up with a report that says that perhaps our excitement around National Treasury's guidelines, for example, in relation to localization of cement, may be a bit misguided. What do you mean?
Hi, Kaya. Yes, we released a report today saying that localization seems such an attractive idea. Who could be opposed to it? But actually, there is no free lunch, and there are enormous costs to protectionism, which is essentially what this is. So what you're saying is we're going to buy, you can only buy, if you're a government agency, local cement. Now, why would you not do that unless it was more expensive or an inferior product? So at least one province has said, hey, that's going to put up the cost of our infrastructure projects. We want to get the cheapest and best cement that we can get, and that's not South African. So what happens with localization is a few companies benefit, PPC and other cement producers in South Africa, but what about government's budgets? What about consumers? What about the firms that are not connected or the firms that are trying to break in? They're going to struggle to do that in a small domestic market. So we're saying that the costs of localization are underestimated, and they're costs that diffuse throughout the economy, and that what we're doing is we're cutting ourselves off from global supply chains and innovation and the pressures on firms to compete. Now, we want the South African economy to grow, but we don't think this is the right approach, and it's certainly not a top priority.
You know, and when the government came up with the directive on cement, I specifically spoke to Sephaku and PPC, and one of the questions that I asked was, is it going to make a difference? Is government even procuring cement at a large scale? And it turned out that absolutely nobody knew. So at that point in time, it looked like it was indeed of a bit of an arbitrary call. But yet, I suppose the question remains is that, yes, we must do trade-offs. And in a country with such high unemployment, isn't this the type of cost we should all sort of bite the bullet for?
Well, think of it this way. Firstly, the reason we're not buying a lot of cement is that since 2018, we haven't embarked on one new big infrastructure project. So let's put that aside. South Africa's unemployment is horrific, and it's close to 12 million people. Now, that idea is if we protect local firms, they'll hire more people. Why? They're going to put their costs up. There's not much pressure to hire new people. Much better to say, how do we make this a much more competitive environment for existing firms and new firms so that South African firms can supply the domestic market and compete? We know what the big issues are in South Africa. It's not that we import too much. The big issues are that our logistics services are appalling. Think of power, think of the ports, think of rail. And now we're imposing new demands on Transnet where we're saying you can only buy South African. And they're saying we can't buy rail tracks in South Africa. We don't produce any. There are locomotives lying sort of not being used where they have to buy local products to fix these locomotives. The situation's so desperate, the mining companies are saying, well, look, we'll import them because the government can only impose these quotas and targets on government agencies and not on private players. So we're saying if you want a bigger economy, if you want more employment, we've got to do all the things we keep talking about. We've got to fix red tape. We've got to get less, not more. We've got to fix logistics. We've got to recalibrate the labor market so we're more labor intensive. And we've got to compete and expand into global markets because the South African market is too small. We'll never mop up unemployment with only the South African market.
The Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition, whom we are supposed to be speaking to in a few minutes' time, but now apparently stuck on a flight, he's been a big advocate of SA's manufacturers being supported through the 20% reduction in non-petroleum imports over the next 5 years. Is the issue here that that comes at a significant cost in terms of our competitiveness? Are we seeing that South African producers and South African manufacturers tend to react by sort of, you know, riding the wave of that protectionism rather than making themselves agile enough to compete, even if the 20% reduction or that rule didn't exist?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're saying. We're saying that we don't think the 20% is possible, certainly not in certain sectors, which would have to grow something like 20 to 50% a year in order to meet that. That's not possible. Now, there are three kinds of costs, at least, that will occur if we insist on this enforced localization. You will be saying to local producers, take the cement producers, we can only buy from you. What prevents them putting up their prices and selling goods that aren't the best in the world? Number one. So prices will go up, not just for government agencies, but for consumers, for other firms, all sorts of people. Secondly, if we say we can only buy local, well, what are the incentives to innovate for those local firms? We cut them off from new technology, from competitive products that might be better and that might force them to be more efficient and cheaper. And thirdly, we encourage lobbying. I want my product to be on the designated list of only local consumption. And that's as Professor Jagdish Bhagwati of Columbia University has called it, those are directly unproductive activities. And they favor the bigger firm. They favor the existing firm. This is the wrong approach when we're trying to open up the economy to new black, mainly black firms. This is going to not grow South Africa. It's going to make us it's almost like going backwards. We're cutting ourselves off from global technologies and innovation, and we're saying South Africans can't compete.
And some might argue that that's perhaps the old iteration of how things used to be. Surely in an age like this, everybody can sort of access technologies that they would acknowledge are going to make their processes more efficient. So no one is going to rest on their laurels on the basis that, well, government is going to buy from me. Are we perhaps looking at it from the prism of how they used to be rather than what they can be?
Not at all. Think of it from the level of a firm. You and I run a company, and we've been told that government agencies can only buy from us and our two competitors, because you and I know we have quite a concentrated economy in a number of sectors. So we say, that's great. We're going to kind of eat up one of our competitors, expand our market share that way, and we've got no real competition. Or we divide up the market between us and the two other firms in our sector, and that's it. Why should we innovate? It's not a comment on, yes, you can do things via the internet, but why should I?
In the short run, Anne, we do have an unemployment problem, and we have a government that clearly hasn't found a comprehensive solution for fixing some of these challenges. Is this not the type of thing that in the short run can be an initiative that at least secures a job or two? Of course, the problem with government, as you rightly said, is that even with the cement conversation, they couldn't explain to us how cement had actually ended up on the designated list. Was it simply as a result of lobbying? They couldn't even explain the scale of what it is that they thought they might buy, so no one knows what the ultimate impact of that is. But on the unemployment conundrum, if there is an argument that some sectors have advanced that if you don't support us, we're going to go under, surely government saying that, well, if nothing else, we'll simply buy from you and bite the bullet for this extra margin, is not that the thing we should be doing in the short run?
Well, firstly, South Africa, the government has very little money, number one. The costs are not just to government, but they're throughout the society, including to consumers who also have very little money, most of them. I don't think this is the way to deal with unemployment. As you know, Kaya, we've done a lot of work on unemployment, and we're saying there are no shortcuts here. You have to say, how do we grow this economy? How do we make investors risk their money here? How do we encourage people to expand their companies? The South African market is pretty small compared to the African market or the global market. So we want companies thinking about expansion And that requires fixing the environment and the bigger issues I'm talking about, some of which could be done very quickly. You could, there are all sorts of ways you could speed up the service provision we're getting from Transnet or Portnet. We could speed up the power provision in this society. So we could also recalibrate the labor market. So I don't buy that this is the way to deal with unemployment. We would argue probably shrink the economy in the medium term if you go this route. We need to be an open, competitive economy, and there are very few developing countries that have succeeded without an export-led strategy. And the truth is, look at the motor cars, automotive industry. You often need to import in order to produce products to export. So we think this is a misunderstanding. And it's also based on a notion that we over-import, but we can find no evidence for that. We're a pretty average country when it comes to other developing countries like Mexico or Thailand or Malaysia or even Sweden and Germany. We import about the same as they do. So we don't think this is the road to go for the South African economy.
Very interesting insights there. Thank you very much to Anne Bernstein. Unfortunately, out of time, we're going to go for a traffic update. And then thereafter, we actually are speaking to the department.